for you, it helps. It raises some questions. I'm not answering a whole lot, but I'm sure raising a few, I think. I hope that the rest of your day is very, very productive. I hope that you have a wonderful day. I want to thank you for spending a portion of your day with me and with the Head On Radio Network. We respect the time that you give us. We commit ourselves to make it worthwhile. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Bill O'Brien. Peace.
This is the Quality News Network. Dutch police have detained 12 passengers who were on an aborted Northwest Airlines flight bound for India from Amsterdam today after what was described as suspicious activity in the cabin. The pilot turned the plane around in German airspace and returned it to the Netherlands, where the flight was canceled. A CD showing the two Fox News journalists kidnapped in the Palestinian territory 9 days ago has been obtained by a Gaza news agency. On it, they appear to be in good health, say they want to come home. A previously unknown group claims responsibility for their abduction, but why they kidnapped the two men is still not clear. Lebanon is urging the U.S. to convince Israel to remove the sea and air blockade it imposed at the beginning of its 34-day war with Hezbollah. Lebanon's prime minister is also asking Washington to increase its financial aid to help Lebanon recover from war-related economic damage, which is running into billions of dollars. In southern Lebanon today, an Israeli soldier was killed and three wounded by a landmine planted by Israeli forces last month, and three Lebanese soldiers were also killed today, dismantling an unexploded missile in the same area. Attacks in several Iraqi cities today have killed six and wounded several dozen people. Saddam Hussein's second trial is in recess now until next month after testimony today from Kurdish survivors who described the bombardment of their villages with deadly chemicals in the 1980s. Saddam and six co-defendants are on trial for genocide and war crimes. Local Iraqi officials in Mamadiya have appointed a committee to investigate the rape and murder of a 14-year-old girl and the killing of her family, for which five U.S. soldiers have already been charged in a U.S. military court. NATO troops in Afghanistan have killed 11 people they say were Taliban insurgents planning an ambush in the Kandahar province. The local residents say the men were not Taliban, but ordinary civilians. The Marine Corps is starting to order thousands of inactive reserves back to active duty. It will happen over the next few months to serve tours of anywhere from 12 to 18 months. It's the first involuntary recall since the war in Iraq began in 2003. The six world powers are now in the process of studying Iran's response to their offer of incentives for a suspension of Iran's nuclear program. Tehran says it wants to begin immediate negotiations to resolve the dispute. Connecticut's Secretary of State has certified that Senator Joe Lieberman has enough signatures to appear on November's ballot as an independent. He lost the Democratic primary to Ned Lamont. Wildfires continue to burn in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Nearly 13,000 acres have been scorched by the fires, most of which officials say were started by lightning. This is the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Home sales dropped more than expected last month. The National Association of Realtors reporting that the existing homes sold at an annual pace of $6.3 million in July. That's the slowest pace since January of 2004. The nation's largest hog and pork producer says its first quarter earnings fell 50%. Smithfield Foods is blaming the losses on higher production costs and losses on its cattle feed investment. Wendy's International, the nation's third largest fast food chain, reports its July sales rose 3.6% and that they expect August sales to be robust, primarily due to the introduction of their deli-style sandwiches. Paramount Studios has ended its 14-year relationship with actor Tom Cruise, saying that his recent conduct has not been acceptable to Paramount. A coalition of 13 conservative groups is urging the Justice Department and the FBI to crack down on American hotels which offer pay-per-view pornography films. They say that they may violate state and federal obscenity laws. And Sony Pictures Entertainment has acquired online video sharing site Grouper Networks for $65 million. Gold is trading down 80 cents an ounce this hour at $633.20. Silver's at $12.66 an ounce. And light sweet crude is down $1.60 at $71.50 a barrel. All the markets are down on Wall Street. The Dow down 39 points to 11,301. Nasdaq down 12 to 2138. And the S&P 500 is down 5 to 1294. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the Week in Review today. It's one of my favorite shows because we can talk about anything, anything you want to talk about. All you have to do is call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Any topic is fair game. And I want to talk with you. You can also comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Washington right now is pretty calm. It's, of course, congressional recess. Congress is out of town. The president's out of town. He's off in Crawford, Texas. This time, apparently, he's going to keep his vacation down a little bit shorter than he has in the past. Virtually every awful thing has happened to America during the Bush's vacations, whether it's preparing for September 11th or, of course, getting ready for. I think he wants to be seen as on much, but me, I prefer when he's out of town. I think things work a lot better in Washington that way. Meanwhile, of course, the Middle East is aflame. More people are being killed in Iraq than ever before. At the same time, as it's not really on our media pages. Have you noticed that? They're not talking about Iraq very much. I think people are so sick of the war, they don't even want to hear about the massive casualties and the ongoing civil war. Iran is a much bigger threat than ever before. I want to talk about that. And in fact, we're going to do a special show tomorrow with an Iranian-American activist, giving us really details into the Iranian mindset, both of the government and its people, and of, well, Islamic terrorists in general. Israel seems to be in a bind. I think they were mistaken to trust the world would protect them. It's always a mistake for Israel to believe that anyone will protect them other than themselves. I think that Security Council resolution shows that. And here it is, the ceasefire that all the world demands. They're saying, in effect, that Israel lost the war. I want to talk about that. Court decisions in this hour. The most important, of course, being the idea that the president, wiretapping all of us, is unconstitutional. How do you know? A judge insisting the law. It's an extreme idea, but one that those of us who actually respect the Constitution believe in. I want to talk about how Bush responded to that ruling, because it's very telling. He doesn't attack its law. He just attacks its politics. There's also a tobacco ruling that I want to discuss, all about how the tobacco companies really mistreat Americans, but Congress and the president don't seem to want to stop it. And then one of my favorite topics, of course, is coming up to the election of 2006. I think that the Lamont-Lieberman race had a very interesting conclusion. As you know, I supported Ned Lamont, and I support him again going into the general election. And it's interesting that Lieberman, even with the Republicans' help, is struggling to hold on to a seat. We can talk about how that really, I think, presages a very different Democratic Party. I think it's a good thing. Meanwhile, the Republicans in Washington are running away from the president. They invite him in undercover. I think Bush coming to a Republican fundraiser today is very. He comes in undernight, undercover. You know, he sneaks in the back door. He makes a bunch of money and then he leaves because the Republicans don't want to be seen with. The diehard conservatives know money, but if the press finds out about it, then they're in trouble because, of course, Bush remains approval ratings in the 30s. And I have to tell you, it's really interesting in Washington. People believe the Democrats are taking over. I mean, you know, I've supported that in 04, certainly in 02, but people in Washington believe it. And how do you know they believe it? Well, You ever noticed, you may have heard the old saying about rats deserting a sinking ship, that they're sort of the first to get off the ship before it sinks? Well, rats in Washington are the lobbyists. And, of course, the lobbyists are the rats, and they're the ones who are starting to turn to the Democrats. And it's amazing. Here you had the K Street Project. You had basically an insistence that all the lobbyists be Republicans, and now they're turning to Democrats. And so when the rats know, you know that a sinking ship's coming. And I also want to talk in this hour to Mr. Makaka. I want to talk about George Allen and his special saying. And really, how I want to talk in detail about this, not just because Virginia is just across the river from Washington, but I think George Allen typifies what this Republican Party is all about. I think he's like our president, George W. Bush, kind of a false cowboy. And I think his race tells us a lot about, well, the future of the Republican Party. After all, George Allen was once suggested as a candidate for president in 2008. So lots of topics to talk about, but I want to hear from you. I want to know what you care to talk about. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And we'll be back with your calls or comments on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com right after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Hey, yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America. Where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It is the calm before the storm, what they call August in Washington prior to an election year. Everything is quiet, and but everyone knows that this may be the year. In just 3 months, it may be the case that the Democrats finally take over Congress. As I said before the break, you know, the lobbyists even believe it. The rats on a sinking ship. You may know that Tom DeLay, about 6 years ago, maybe even a little bit earlier, he insisted all lobbyists need to be Republicans. He wouldn't even talk with you. He wouldn't even consider, you know, your corporation wanted money for something. He wouldn't even discuss it with you unless you only hired Republicans and fired all your Democrats. Of course, when you had a Congress that was Republicans in both houses, as we do now, and the president, of course, lobbyists decided, well, that's what we have to do, and they fired all the Democrats. There was a mass wave of Democratic lobbyists that were being fired. Well, they're starting to hire them back. Slowly and surely, the Democratic lobbyists are coming back. Now, I'm no fan of lobbyists of any stripe, Republican or Democratic, but like I said, those rats know. And one of the reasons why the Republicans are in trouble, I think one of the best ways to understand what's going on is to look at the Senate race of George Allen in Virginia. Now, this is not only true because, heck, I'm just across the river from Virginia, and I do a number of stories on Virginia politics, but this really seems to me the perfect race, the perfect typifying race for understanding the Republicans. I mean, the races where we know they're in trouble. Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania is clearly going out. We know that we've got in Rhode Island, the liberal Republican left, Senator Chafee, is in trouble. Those races are understandable. Allen, this was the guy that was going to be the next George Bush. I mean, here's a guy that was planning, still is planning, I guess, to run for president in 2008. This is someone who, like Hillary Clinton, had a problem in his reelection bid and presidential election in 2008. And there are many ways in which George Allen is very, I don't know, similar to George Bush, mostly in the sense that he's a false hick. Here's a guy like George Bush, well-heeled. He's from California. He, you know, he's grown up in that. I mean, he, I don't think they were near as rich as George Bush. But he's certainly not a guy from the South, not a guy from Virginia. And yet he seems to have loved all kinds of Confederate memorabilia, Confederate flags. Now, you know, it's one thing. I really think it's one thing for a kid from the South to have those things. And we can talk, if you want, about the Confederate flag. I find the whole thing very interesting and troubling at the same time. I mean, the Confederate flag is, no question, for virtually every African American, a symbol of racism. But there was a time, and, you know, I'm from Tennessee, there was not too long ago, 30, 40 years ago, when my go to a national convention, a youth convention, and her group would bring the Confederate flag. It was a part of Southern pride. And I understand that. I understand if you're a Southerner, I certainly do not support flying the Confederate flag in any time anymore, but I understand where that comes from. But for someone from California, for Virginia Senator George Allen, who comes from California, for him to embrace the Confederate flag, that's just kind of strange. That, to me, is not someone celebrating Southern heritage. I mean, he did move here. It's kind of strange. And what we find, of course, and you'd have to be, you know, living under a bed, I guess, not to have heard the latest in George Allen's comments, but his latest comments, I think, well, typify the problem. And if you haven't heard, I will tell you. Allen is running against Webb, Secretary Webb. He's a former naval secretary under Ronald Reagan, in fact, but he is a Democrat now. He says he's a Reagan Democrat. He's someone who left to go to the Republican Party. He's now with the Democrats. Well, he's running, and Allen was going to trounce Webb. Everyone thought, you know, Allen, he's thinking of running for president. Red state, or reliable Bush state, supposed to be close. But a staffer for Webb, a guy from, well, right outside of D.C., Fairfax County in Virginia, a guy by the name of S.R. Siddarth, years old, was videotaping speech for the Webb campaign. This is a very common occurrence and a very good one, I think, a very smart thing for an opposition candidate to do. Doesn't cost much money. You know, I mean, in this case, Allen, who is one of the largest receipts of lobbying money in the Senate, is got so much more money over Webb. He was way ahead in the money race. But one thing you can do, you know, buy a commercial, is just get a guy to tape the campaign. So this guy, S.R. Siddharth, who is a native-born Virginian but happens to be of Indian-American heritage, so he's got dark skin, folks, even though he's an American, was taping the Allen campaign, and Allen called him Macaca. This guy, I don't know what his name is, Allen said, this Macaca. Well, people had no idea what that meant. What is Macaca? And Allen said to Macaca, welcome this guy to Virginia, welcome this guy to America. Offensive when you think about it. I mean, S.R. is not just a native-born American. He's native-born Virginian. Here is Allen, who's born in California, welcoming a native-born Virginia to Virginian. What is it, that made Siddharth not American, not Virginian in Allen's view? Well, there's really only one thing, and that's the color of his skin. Why would he assume that someone who looks to be of Indian heritage, Indian from India, is not American? Well, if you look at the word Macaca, and you recognize the fact that Allen himself is a first-generation American, his mother is French-Tunisian. She is, when France occupied a lot of northern Africa, which they did for a number of years, they had colonies in Tunisia and in Algeria, a number of French moved to that region of Africa and lived there. In fact, they were called the Pieds Noirs, the Blackfoots. You could read all about it in Albert Camus' book, The Stranger. But the point is that there's this community there, and one of the ways that the Arabs would call Africans, or the French would use to call brown-skinned people, was macaca, and it comes from the monkey. It's not a very pleasant term. It's extremely obscure. And if you didn't know that Allen's mother was French-Tunisian, you might just not know what he's talking about. But here he finds this Indian-American staffer for Webb, S.R. Siddharth, calls him a racist name and says, welcome to America. Well, what's interesting about it is people are starting to recognize who George Allen is. I mean, now, for example, they're starting to read the book of his sister, which was written, I think, back in 2000, Jennifer Allen. Let me read to you some from that book, because people are starting to just to recognize, I think it goes broader than George Allen, because, again, he was supposed to typify the Republican Party. He was going to take George Bush's place. Let me read to you from some of her book, this is sort of courtesy of the New Republic. Let's see, pages 21 and 22. This is Jennifer, his sister, talking. What are your morons watching? George asked as he changed the channel to Hee-Haw. George loved Hee-Haw. His favorite character was the big, slow-witted Junior. Junior tried to tell jokes, yet always failed to remember the punchline. There was also something tree thuggish about Junior that I think... I want you to think about this. Why is this... I mean, you know, plenty of people like Hee-Haw, but Hee-Haw is all about dumb Southern hicks. I mean, isn't that what it's about? Hee-Haw in front of white trash. And a nice word either. But that's what the show is about. And here is George Allen, I think, making fun and then trying to be like them. Let me read to you from page 162 of George Allen's sister's book. Quote, George took out a plug of tobacco and stuffed it in his mouth. He growled up a thick wad of phlegm and spit it into his hand for the dogs to come lick. He was dressed like a character on Hee-Haw, cowboy hat, flannel shirt, blue jeans, and boots. Mom admired him more than any of the other children. He got straight A's, even when he acted like a hick. She went to stroke her son's arm, but he brushed her away with a loud burp. Unquote. Now, think about this here. Is George Allen trying to pretend to be one of the people? Is he like George Bush when he went to eat some pork rinds? Bush Jr. clears brush Texas ranch that he bought in 2000 in the midst of his campaign. How many people know that? How many people realize that the ranch in Crawford was something that George Bush just... Yet, lot of conservatives buy it. I think a lot of Southerners, many, maybe some who have been mistreated by this administration. I talked Monday with Serge from Mississippi. He talked about the poverty there. And yet they like these hicks. And so even when you don't have a real hick, right, you have George Allen. George Allen, in fact, in that speech said to Webb, of his opponent, Webb, whose family is from Southwest Virginia, that, you know, Webb would never be seen in this area. So it's all about manufacture. It's all about making up who you are. It's all about creating this kind of persona from this California cowboy. And it's interesting that he sort of got caught in the act. Very interesting. Meanwhile, it's not just there. All across the country, you have Republicans deserting the president, deserting George Bush. Here you have Republicans that have 95% voting records. Oh, wherever Bush stood, they stood. And in old campaigns, they'd have Bush come by their side. They're running. They're hiding. And interesting, because it shows that they only believe what they say. I mean, there's a difference. There are people who are principled people who stand for what they believe in, whatever it is. I think of Ron Paul, for example. He's a libertarian. He's a Republican. He's a libertarian out of Texas, and this guy is standard libertarian. He doesn't want the government doing anything. For good or for ill, he doesn't want government. And, you know, I disagree with him, but I respect his stand. But you find, I mean, the irony of all these people that call John Kerry a flip-flopper, you find Republican in race after race sneaking George Bush in for the fundraiser, but not showing up with him in commercials because they know how much the public has turned against them. This, my friends, I think is the sign of a real sea change that I hope to see in November 2006. Not to get complacent by any stretch, because, you know, 3 months is a long time in politics. But when you got the president going and hyping terrorist attacks, nobody's really listening. And that's what he uses. I mean, there are terrorists because they're a danger to America, and then there are those that use terrorism solely as a partisan issue, as the president has. And nobody's listening anymore. And I want to talk a little bit more about this after the break, that because the president has been hyping terrorism for so long, and because he's been using it as a partisan tactic, what does that do? Well, it means that people aren't really following the war on terrorism. It's like crying wolf, and it's gotten to be a big problem. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Any topic you want to talk about, give us a call. We'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Wednesday Week in Review. All topics are valid. Give us a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can also comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. A lot of you already have commented. In fact, I want to read your comments in just a sec. And if you just want to talk amongst yourselves, you can go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. And you can say whatever you want. I won't read those comments. But if you want your comment on the air, put it on the blog. And there's been a lot of comment about the recent wiretapping decision. I have an email here from Robert. It says, Mark, might you have any analysis and or opinion as a constitutional lawyer that may assist us laymen out here on the court's scathing decision over the president's wiretapping? Robert points out that the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says that he's going to appeal it. And he wants to know whether Alberto is the president's legal counsel or is appointed to represent. Well, it's a good question. You know, what's interesting to me about this opinion is, of course, back when the wiretapping scandal started, back that, in fact, most of us, 7 Americans, in fact, had our phone records, billions, trillions of calls. Millions of Americans had our phone records confiscated by the government, so they know exactly who we're calling, what time we're calling them, you know, whether it's a chat line or something embarrassing or a doctor or whether we're calling our mother. The president was aware of it, the same president who won't let us know what his energy plan is or who is funding it, had to know all of our secret phone calls. And I said at the time that both that and the wiretapping of Americans who have committed no crime but call a foreign country, that was against the law. And at the time, I cited the law. It's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It's a law passed during the Carter years because of some of the abuses of prior presidents, specifically because of the abuse that was most talked about when FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover tapped Martin. Not because he had any evidence that King had committed any crime. He wanted to prove, in fact, that King was a communist. He never could prove that. He did prove that Martin Luther King actually had an affair. You know, even great men that we don't find particularly noteworthy. Bill Clinton would be another one of my heroes that perhaps did not act so well in the bedroom. But that's, to me, that's none of our concern. I mean, what the political leader does is what matters, but they use that, and they use that to try to bring King down. Well, because of the revulsion of having our government tap the phones of civil rights leaders who had committed no crime, and we passed this law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and the purpose of this law is to say, first of all, no domestic spying. You want to spy on someone at home, okay? You do what the Constitution says you got to do. And that's in the Bill of Rights. It's the Fourth Amendment. You get a search warrant. You show probable cause to believe that someone has committed a crime. And then, by all means, you tap their phones. And, of course, you can do that with terrorists. You can say, okay, this guy is a member of Al-Qaeda. Hezbollah, Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda in killing lots of people and bringing down legitimate governments, and so we're going to spy on them. And I have no problem with that. No problem at all. Get the probable cause to believe that some crime is being committed, and you can spy on them. You actually have a wide government recognized, Congress recognized, in passing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that if you're a foreigner, then there's even more of a chance to spy on you. For example, in America, you have to show probable cause to believe someone has committed a crime. For a foreigner, as I said, you could simply show that someone is a member of a terrorist group that espouses violence, and that would be enough. You go to the court. And in fact, if you don't want to go to a public court, to a regular court, you go to a secret court. And the court is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And they have approved, I believe, every warrant except one or two. I mean, virtually everything gets stamped. But at least you have judges looking in there making sure the government has a claim. Well, George Bush did not want to obey this law. He found that, in fact, that when you want to spy on 250 million Americans, 75% of us, so 220 million Americans, when you want to spy on hundreds of millions of people, it's really hard to file millions of petitions before the Foreign Intelligence. So he knew he couldn't do it legally, so he just did it. And at the time, I pointed out, I cited the statute, I showed why it was wrong, and this court, of course, has found it constitutional, saying in very strong ringing language. And, you know, you can disagree with some of the reasoning of the court's opinion. I have no problem with that. That's what America is all about. But interestingly, and I think this will go to your question, Robert, about Alberto Gonzalez, the president did not respond, and Gonzalez did not respond, by saying what we did is legal. They didn't respond in the way you'd expect them to, saying, hey, you know, judge, you made some faulty legal reasoning, which is, you know, always possible. This is why what we said is legal. There's an exception to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or there's this, that, or the other. They didn't make those arguments. No, let me read to you what the president said upon hearing of this decision. This is a direct quote. Those who herald this decision simply do not understand the nature of the world in which we live. This country of ours is at war. We must give those whose responsibility it is to protect the United States the tools necessary to protect this country in a time of war. So you hear what Bush is saying? He's saying, I want it. But what's interesting about it is if Bush believed that he needed to change the laws, if he believed, for example, that spying on 250 million was a right policy choice, Congress, and say Congress, which is controlled by my party, the Republican Party, I think that 75% of Americans need to be spied on. I think 3 out of 4 Americans need to be spied on. I think 3 out of 4 Americans might be Al-Qaeda terrorists. 3 out of 4 Americans might be criminals. And so I want you to vote on it. I want you to – we could even inform Americans, right? We could put a little notice in the mailbox. You are being spied on courtesy of the federal government. If you don't like it, you know, vote for another member of Congress. He didn't do that. Now, why didn't he do that? Well, we know the reasons he didn't do that, because it's not exactly politically wise to want to spy on 3 out of 4 of us. He knew that Congress, even his Republican Congress, would not pass a law to make this wiretapping legal. So his argument is a political argument. We need to do this, right? That's his argument. But he didn't make that argument in the way the Constitution, Congress, you get a law passed. No. He just went around the law, and he's not arguing that it's legal. I mean, that's the amazing thing. He's not arguing that. We saw some of those arguments. There were a few of them. They were kind of half-hearted. As a lawyer, I'd have to fail any matter of legal. At one point, the administration argued that when Congress authorized the war against the Taliban, when they authorized the war against Al-Qaeda, you know, an authorization that I and 99% of Americans supported because we were attacked on September 11th, that when they authorized it, they implicitly authorized the president to spy on 3/4 of us Americans. Now, if you put that on a legal test in law school, you would flunk. It's ridiculous. It doesn't pass the laugh test. I mean, there's a reason why my colleague at Yale Law School, John Yoo, I don't remember him making such good grades. He's the one, by the way, who, I'm sad to say, devised a lot of the the legal strategy for allowing the president to wiretap so many beyond the law. Because it's just not legal. He would flunk the test. And so the president has decided, I'm not going to try to defend it on the grounds of law. I'm going to try to defend it on the grounds of policy. But again, then he would have Congress pass the law. It asked me, what is this thing about Alberto Gonzalez? Is he just the president's legal counsel, Robert asked, or is he appointed to represent the people? The answer, Robert, is he is appointed to represent the people. The president's counsel, her name is Harriet Myers. You know, her job is to represent the president's personal legal interests. But the reason why the attorney general is in the cabinet, is the highest legal officer in the United States, has to be approved by the Senate, is because he's supposed to not represent the president. He's supposed to represent the American people. And that's why, if you remember back to Watergate, we had the Saturday Night Massacre, right? You had Richard Nixon, and his attorney general said, Mr. President, you got to follow the law. You've got to investigate this Watergate burglary, even if it leads to the very top. And the president said, no, I insist that you shut down the Justice Department. And the attorney general at the time refused, and he was fired. And then the next one up in line also refused, and he was fired. And finally, Robert Bork, remember him, took over and did the president's will. But people understood when he was fired, this was the law. So, yes, the attorney general did the pleasure of the president, but he's supposed to represent more. He's supposed to represent all of us. Another legal decision that came down recently is the tobacco decision. I don't think this got a lot of press. 100 pages. Hey, I haven't read the decision. You know, I got better things to do than to read 1,700 pages. But it was 1,700 pages. I think it took a year for this judge to write. And it detailed exactly how the tobacco companies have manipulated American people to get them addicted to nicotine. And it talked about how the tobacco companies start purposely preying on children because they know that most people who start smoking begin in their teens. And it talked about how they knew all the addictive effects of nicotine. It is the most addictive drug known to man. It is, and this is important. A lot of people don't realize. It is more addictive than cocaine. It is more addictive than crack. It is more addictive, certainly, than caffeine or marijuana or heroin. It is the most addictive drug known to man. The tobacco companies knew this. They knew that it was a deadly product. They knew that one-third of all smokers die from smoking. You can tell I'm not a big fan of either tobacco. And but they peddled it along. They peddled it along. 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, right up to today. And she detailed in, 1,700 pages, a scientific detail of proof that tobacco companies knew their drug was addictive, knew it was, and yet they peddled it anyway. And what's the bottom line? You'd think at the end of this powerful decision, she would pound those tobacco companies into the ground. No. She said, in effect, they have to pay the government's lawyer fees and they can go on their way. There was no penalty. There was no fine. The Justice Department, and this was begun before this administration, but it asked for billions and billions of dollars. They had actually lowered it under the Bush administration. She ordered nothing because an appellate court, by the most conservative court in the United States, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the ones that the Republicans have been insisting that the Democrats shouldn't filibuster, and they've been pummeling it with these right-wing ideologues, said in effect, you can't punish tobacco. You can't punish big tobacco for this massive fraud that has led to the deaths of 400,000 Americans a year. You just can't punish them. Sorry, they give Republicans campaign contributions. Don't hurt big tobacco. Well, for the judge, because I think she, with that opinion, she belied the conclusions, right? The facts of her opinion showed the danger. She didn't feel that she could actually order damages. And maybe with a Democratic Congress, maybe tobacco to cough up some of the earned on the deaths of so many Americans and use them to do more smoking cessation programs. That's my idea. Sorry, all you smokers out there, but I think we can help you quit. If you want to call on this or any other topic, the toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When I come back, I'm going to talk about the Middle East. We'll be right back after this.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First, your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cent per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
Ready? Not. Ready? Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready? But not your mind.
Ready?
Not. Ready?
No way.
You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not. Ready.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Back to the Inside Scoop. You know, the scary thing about the fact that Republicans use true threats out there, true terrorist threats out there, and they use them for partisan purposes, are to be calm about the real threat. And that's the irony. I mean, there's such irony here. Here you have Republicans who are hyping non-existent or very small threats, like Saddam Hussein, who posed virtually no threat to the United States. And by doing that, getting everyone hyped up, and until Republicans truly believe, and I think Republicans out there, a number of them, conservatives, truly believe the Democrats are weak on terror. And it's weird. I mean, you listen sometimes to the right-wing talk shows or to the Fox Propaganda Channel, and people actually believe that the Democrats are not concerned about protecting America. And, you know, it's interesting. My very first show, the very first show I ever did 3 years ago, in June 03, was on Homeland Security, because I worked on the congressional committee that oversaw Homeland Security for the Democrats. And we had a bill at that time. And that bill might have cost as much as $20 billion. But when you think that the war in Iraq has cost 20 times that, you know, $400 billion or so, you might see this $20 billion as well spent. What would it have done? Well, about $4 billion buying up loose nukes in the Soviet Union. The idea was that as the Soviet Union had fallen apart, that in other areas of the former Soviet Union, Kazakhstan and Ukraine and Azerbaijan and so forth, you had peddlers on the market selling nuclear weapons, selling nuclear warheads. And I don't know about you, I don't like those shadowy arms dealers, but I'd rather our government buy those weapons than anybody else. And that's what $4 billion would go for. Another $8 to $10 billion would go to protecting our home. Isn't that what Homeland Security is about? Protecting our nuclear plants, protecting our chemical plants. We feared, frankly, I still fear, that someone would take a Timothy McVeigh-like truck bomb and blow it into certain chemical plants that still remain today undefended. I won't say which ones. But there are some, and there are some near big cities, where the right terrorist hits the right plant, well, thousands of Americans. Well, we want... At the time, George Bush wanted another tax cut. This was early 03, late 02. He wanted another tax cut, and he said that this program was too expensive. It was less than a 20th of the cost of the war in Iraq was too to protect America by buying up loose nukes, by preparing more first responders. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but the police on September 11th, when the first tower went down, there were a number of New York police and firefighters in there trying to save people's lives. I know you know this, but you may not know that when that first tower came down, everyone, I knew this, I'm not an engineer, but I knew this, you knew this, anyone who saw that first tower come down knew that the second tower was going to come down soon. You know, you watch one fall, you know the other one's coming down. But the firefighters, the police in that second tower, they didn't know. They were trying to save lives. Well, the police tried to call into that second tower to say, hey, guys, you're trying to save lives, but you got about a half hour to live yourself. Get out. Save yourself. I'm sorry to say the people there are already going to die. You need to get out. They tried to call it in. They didn't have equipment because it was crazy, because cell phones, everyone in New York was calling on a cell phone because the emergency equipment was already taxed. They could not radio in to those firefighters and police and save their lives. And I don't know how many died. I would suspect hundreds. One of the things our bill would have done is to provide communications equipment for an emergency. Bush rejected it as too expensive. Now, when you tell these kinds of things to a Republican, they look at you like, I don't know, you're from Mars. It doesn't compute. It doesn't enter their mind. I mean, what you really have to do, and I don't know many conservative Republicans will sit down and let you do this, is you have to do what I do. You go to the Internet, trot out the bill, show them the bill, show them it was sponsored by Democrats, with actually a good number of Republican support, I have to say, that Bush threatened to veto it because he wanted his tax cuts. People don't even believe it. And they don't believe it because Republicans fight in caricature. They're all about, oh, Democrats are weak. And hey, you know, there's some Democrats. Hey, I got some of you listeners on my show. You know who you are, who are believe in pacifism, believe that, you know, peace is always, war never solves anything. And you know, I respect the view. It dates back to the Quakers. I disagree with that view, but I respect it. But I also recognize it's by far the minority of Democrats. Only one member of Congress voted in response to the war, to Al-Qaeda attacking us with the war in Afghanistan, and that was Barbara Lee of Oakland, someone whose strongest opponent is usually a Green. That was it. Most Democrats supported fighting back, just as most Democrats support Homeland Security. And yet Republicans talk as if, well, Democrats don't care about fighting and protecting us. And here's the irony of all of this. The irony of all of this is that there are real threats out there. Iran, for example, is a huge threat, an absolutely major threat. But America can't do anything about it because our troops are stuck in Iraq. Heck, we can't even capture Osama bin Laden because we've got 5 to 10 times the number of troops in Iraq than we do in Afghanistan. And, you know, most people don't realize Afghanistan is 50% larger than Iraq. It's got 50% a lot more mountains. It's a lot harder than Iraq. And yet we can't use them to fight terrorism. So how do you change that perspective? Some Democrats fall into this. I have Democrats that say, you know, we can't, or North Korea, because, you know, look at how we messed up in Iraq. And that's wrong, too. I'd venture to say, as wrong as the war in Iraq is, standing up to Iran, standing up to North Korea, is something we have to do. These are real threats, and we have to worry about them. And for me, part of the problem with what happened recently with the Security Council in Israel is the world so angry at Bush, so angry at our unjustified war in Iraq, that they're not willing to recognize a real threat where it exists. I mean, Hezbollah is determined to destroy the state of Israel. They want to go in, they want to, you know, murder every Jew there, throw them into the sea, destroy the state of Israel. That is their goal, that is their plan, that is what they say day after day after day. Remember, they started the war, they attacked, and yet all the people that were calling for a ceasefire, all of those ones saying, oh, you know, Israel, you can't fight back in your own self-defense. Hard, you know, if you fight back in self-defense, you might hurt. Well, now we have a ceasefire, and as soon as the United Nations did it, everyone started backing out. The French, who were going to use force to disarm Hezbollah, they're backing out. Hezbollah says, ha ha, we're not going to. And then when Israel tries to disarm the Security Council resolution called for, they're condemned again. You can't win for losing. You have to fight back strongly, and you have to fight back smartly. You have to know where your enemy is. Meanwhile, in Iraq, this month, last month in July, 3,400 civilians died. 3,400 plus civilians. Now that's 100 times whatever happened in Lebanon, right? And yet, you don't hear the world talking about that. You don't hear anyone talking about the civil war that we can't stop, that we're involved in, that's not a threat to the United States, it's a threat to Iraq. But Shiites and Sunnis killing each other, that's a problem. And yet the world is focusing on Israel's self-defense. It doesn't make sense. And the reason it doesn't make sense is because people get in these mindsets. People on the right say Democrats can't possibly be concerned about national security, which is ridiculous. But some of them say, this is U.S. force, it's wrong. Anytime you act in self-defense, it's wrong. That Iran isn't really a threat. That North Korea isn't really a threat. And in my view, those people are wrong too. A smart government recognizes where and responds accordingly. People care about human values. One of the best things Bill Clinton did, in my view, and one of the reasons why I've always supported Wesley Clark for president, was the action in Bosnia, the action in Kosovo, where we stopped genocide. And how do we do it? We did it through an air campaign, but we also did it by putting in a peacekeeping force that had a monopoly on force, that said, if you use force, we're going to confiscate your guns. And until that happens, until the United Nations does that in Lebanon, I guarantee you we're going to have another war, and more people will die, and more houses will be destroyed. You've got to show the people who are determined to use force, just as we had to show Hitler in 1938. You've got to show the people that are invading other countries they've got to stop. Iraq was on its own, was mostly harmless, and because we've wasted time and wasted force on this, we're not going after the real forces. And so I say Democrats stand strong, fight America's real enemies, and understand that actually Democrats are going to stand firm protecting America.